Hi, welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the weekly podcast where my guests and I explore what it means and takes to be a kick-ass and kind adult these days. Expect deep, real and raw, as no topic is out of bounds. We want lives and businesses that are profitable, sustainable and fun. We want lives that feel as good on the inside as they perhaps look on the outside. And that means adulting the fuck up. I'm Ebony Allard. I'm an award-winning coach, author, and speaker. And if you're ready to implement, go to n2n365.club. For now, though, let's get on with the show. Hey, everyone, and welcome to this first new episode of 2020 with a guest. Today, I'm joined by Heather Thorkelston. I can't even say it. We'll start again. Heather Thorkelston. Heather, say your name.
Heather Thorkelson.
Thank you. Who is a Canadian dual entrepreneur living in rural Sweden. She grew up living all over the world and in her early 30s finally took the leap to self-employment and never looked back. In 2013, she was living in Peru working as an online business consultant when she went to Antarctica and fell in love. And by 2015, she'd opened a second business, a polar expedition company. She's just finished writing her book for Incurable Entrepreneurs titled No Plan B, which will be released in the spring of 2020. Welcome, Heather. Thank you for helping me trip over your name.
Oh, thanks for having me. And don't feel bad. Everybody has trouble with my name. It's painful.
Well, I'm going to just keep moving because otherwise we'll end up talking about that forever. And there's so many other things I want to talk about with you. Let's start with the kind of opener. What is adulting, or what does being a kick-ass and kind adult mean to you?
Adulting to me means truly, madly, deeply taking personal responsibility for yourself. You know, I feel like that's one thing that is it's a bone of contention for me. It's a pet peeve when I am around other people. I mean, this is one of the reasons why I couldn't stay in the working world anymore, is because I feel like there was a lack of personal responsibility. People are very quick to pass the buck. And so in my world, you are properly adulting when you are taking proper personal responsibility for yourself, for your work, for everything.
Mm-hmm. I hear that. And it's not always easy.
No, it's not easy.
But it's from my perspective, it's definitely a choice, right? And it's a lot of what the kind of entrepreneurial journey is around, is like just this choice to be wildly responsible for your experience as a human.
Yeah, absolutely. And responsible for your experience, but also responsible for your output, responsible for your errors, you know, like it's okay. You know, we're so afraid of things like failure or people perceiving us in certain ways. And like, it's not that scary actually to just show up and be like, oops, I screwed up, or, oh, that's not what I meant. Or even just correcting people who have perceived you in the wrong light, you know, mm-hmm. Like we can own that without it being scary or feeling terrible. You know, there are really ways that we can practice compassion for ourselves and take full responsibility for how we are in the world.
Yeah. I'm interested how that relationship has deepened or changed since you became a dual entrepreneur. So having like two businesses, has that felt like, because it could be double the pressure and double the work and double the like responsibility, right?
Yeah. Yeah. How has it changed? That's a great question. I think I was really fortunate in that my business consulting work and working as a coach was trucking along quite nicely by the time that I opened up my second business. So I didn't really have to be fully plugged in and like managing two whole businesses all the time. Mm-hmm. I could coast along with my coaching because I had a good group of retainer clients. And then, you know, if one of them had a series of people get pregnant and drop off for a period of time, but then there was always someone waiting in the wings or a referral come through that would take up their space. So that business kind of ran itself without me having to do too much work and too much marketing. I just had to show up for my clients and help guide them. But that being said, branching into my second business, which was a type of business that I had no prior experience doing. I mean, there was a lot of stuff in that business that I'm still learning 4 years later. That was really tough. The learning curve was huge. And so trying to tackle all that was a challenge. And the way that I managed it in terms of not having the pressure like kill me or still being able to take responsibility is that I was very transparent with everybody that I worked with. And so I was always, essentially, I came to the fold saying, look, here's what I want to do. Here's my expertise. Here's what I don't know. Help, let's work together. Like, I need some help, you know? And so I didn't pretend to be this like fully formed, I just hatched out of an egg perfection entrepreneur with my second business. I sort of went into it being a little bit vulnerable, but still owning the expertise that I had. And so sometimes when I did make mistakes or, you know, when things didn't go as planned, I didn't feel any shame around things not being perfect. I was just like, okay, chalk that up to experience, science experiment, you know, now we have more data, now we move forward again. And I just kind of kept my finger on the pulse the whole time so that when I did start to feel overwhelmed with stuff, I either triaged and focused only on the important stuff, or I brought other people in. And that's been a huge thing, is making sure that when I start to feel that pressure that I go, okay, wait, what can I delegate? Like, what needs to be off my plate right now, you know, so that I can keep that level of compassion for myself and not get overwhelmed and still feel like there's a lot of integrity in my work.
I love that so much. It's actually really great, because it links into the two new questions I'm going to ask, right? And so my intention for asking these questions is to dive a little bit deeper, and I know that you're okay with that. And like, for anyone listening, I haven't just totally sprung this on them. So one of the things I'm really curious about, and I know that you're going to understand this question, is like, what part of you have you had to, or do you have to, actively adult or actively parent? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. What part of me do I have to actively adult?
Because I'm going to let you think about it, because I didn't like tell you what the question was. Because for me, like, there's the part that very quickly wonders whether everyone likes me, right? And wants to know what everyone else thinks before. And I now have the understanding of personality typing and like social sciences. And I'm like, oh, that's just a character trait, right? That's part of my operating system. I don't have to listen to it, but I do need to parent the little girl that's like, is everyone going to hate me? Is people not going to talk to me again? Like, if I assert my boundaries, if I don't take care of people, and that's a part of me that's not going anywhere. So instead, I just actively adult her, right? And I'm like, okay, what do you need? Like, who do you trust? Who can we get this verification from? Let's not go and be like, ask the whole world's opinion, but maybe let's go and talk to my OBM or my best friend, or like, who is the right person to go and have this conversation with and be vulnerable, yeah, and then get on with it. Does that make sense? Like, that's, yeah, it's a part of me that I know that I have, that I get to actively adult or actively parent in order to be a kick-ass and kind adult most of the time.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. So the thing that comes up for me, there's a couple of things, but I think the strongest one that comes up for me is what I was just talking about, actually, which is when I start to feel like there's too much on my shoulders, I have to take a step back and make sure that I'm not doing all the things. And the reason for that is because I basically raised myself from the age of 10. And so I had to always do everything for myself all the time. Like, I had no safety net. I had no, you know, like, there was no home to go home to if, you know, if I was in my early 20s and my life fell apart or something. Like, there was nothing. There was no safety. There was no emotional or financial or physical safety net at all. And so I went through life thinking I have to do every single little thing all the time to survive, you know, like, it was really kind of this high, I don't know what you call it, but this like, it's like high stress functioning, you know, and it's very easy. I'm sure people who are listening who have some similar or adjacent experience in life, that I'm sure this will land with them. You get to be an adult and then you're like, I still have to be responsible for everything. And it's not an A type thing. I'm definitely not A type. My sister's A type, so I know the difference. it's not that. It's not a control freak thing. It's actually from a scarcity mindset. It's like, if I don't do it, everything's going to fall apart. you know.
I got full body tingles and like every single hair on my autonomic nervous system is like, I know that experience. And yeah. For me, like, yeah, like I, in my teens, as I was beginning to understand responsibility, there was a lot of turbulence in my family life. And I made that mean that the only person who could deal with all of it was me. So I would be there for my siblings, and I would be there for my parents emotionally, and I would be there for myself. And like, ultimately the buck stopped with me. And I became, because I was 14, like I made that mean that everything in the world ultimately is my responsibility.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's a strange thing because I think it's slightly different for everybody as well. Like, you know, when I think about, I hear other people talking about that and, you know, they attach it, that feeling of needing to be everything to everyone, they attach it to their worth. And I don't attach it to my worth. I actually think I have an unusually high sense of self-worth for someone who has my upbringing and my lack of parenting or lack of parental love. But I actually, it is literally, when I really unpack it, it's a survival thing. It's not even like I think I can do it the best and that someone else couldn't do it as good as me. I know other people can do things as well as I can. And I know that I don't need to prove my worth. I just feel like I have to do all the things. It's like my nervous system is trained, you know? So that parenting piece is like constantly reminding myself, like, Heather, for God's sake, like, no, you know, like I'm really intentional now about what I do, what activities I engage in, what stuff I should not be engaging in. And that includes not just my businesses, but also like around the house. Like I can very easily do all the things. We just moved into a new 169-year-old farmhouse in the middle of Sweden. So like, there's a lot of stuff to do, you know? And I'm like, oh, you have all the things to do. I'm like, stop it. My husband does shift work, so he's away for like 5 days at a time. And I'm just shut up. Like, make a list, stick it on the wall so that when my husband gets home, he can do that. You know, I don't need to be doing all the things. Like, it'll all get done, calm down. And so it's like, it's almost like parenting my nervous system to just, it's okay. You know, nothing's going to fall apart. You're okay. And actually I'm 41. I have two businesses. I built my own safety net, you know, like the safety net is there. So, and I still haven't 100% learned, you know?
Well, and like my theory on this is like, you won't, right? Like it will always be an aspect where you need reassurance from yourself, right? Or like that you need to check in around. And on one of the episodes of the podcast, I think it was Kathleen Hannigan said that when we fall off a bike and break our arm or our elbow, after a while that elbow heals, but it's always more sensitive. So you might lean against it, or it's gonna you're gonna be aware of it, you're gonna catch it, you know, it's healed, but it's still a little more fragile and sensitive. And that's my theory on this stuff, right? Like, you're healed, you've done the work, you've grown up, you've really sent yourself love and done whatever you needed to do in order to be in that place. And it's always going to be like trust and like scarcity or lack is always going to be something that's a little more fragile.
I agree completely. It's a really good way of putting it.
And well done, by the way, like reaching that point, because it's not an easy thing. I mean, I say that to myself more than anything. Like, I totally get it. Yeah.
It's not easy at all. It's made me extremely aware and compassionate towards other people and even other people's behavior, because I think now when I see people, younger people than I, behaving in certain ways, I almost immediately start thinking, oh yeah, but like, we don't know what they had. We don't know what kind of, I mean, it sounds kind of ridiculous, but I think it's actually such a fundamental human thing. What we are given, what types of tools, what kinds of support, what kind of everything we're given when we grow up, when we're growing up, it so much informs who we are as adults and how we behave as adults, you know? And so I just find that I'm a lot more compassionate and a lot more forgiving towards people. You know, I say like, oh, I can't work in the working world because people don't take personal responsibility, blah, blah, blah. But they also have a story, right? There's a reason why they don't. And there's a reason why certain behaviors show up. And so it's nice to have moved through a lot of the crap and be able to be, I hope, a better, more compassionate person not only to myself, but towards others in the process.
Yeah. I feel like the relationship that I had, particularly with my mum, is something that, although it was difficult and remains unconventional, I have so much gratitude for it, because it's made me slow down and choose to be inquisitive and curious about other people's experience. Yeah. And become way more compassionate to their circumstances and to what they have the resources and capacity for.
Yeah.
I'm learning to also turn that inwards, right? Like, it feels like I'm at a transition point right now where I finally got my business to a point where it's creating that safety net so that my autonomic nervous system can be like, okay, you can breathe now. What do you need? And that, like, it's, you know, I'm 39 and it's taken a while to like get to that place, but I'm really proud of myself for getting to a place where I've created the space to be able to look at it.
Yeah, you should be proud of yourself. You're awesome.
But again, I think we have different ways of, like, some of us are me first people and some of us are right. Like, I need to make sure that everybody else in the whole world is taken care of before I look at me. And that's a genuine thing for me. I'm not hugely altruistic. It doesn't come from that place. It's not even true martyrdom. It's like, it's a safety thing. It's like, if I know exactly where everyone else is and what they need and that they are taken care of, then and only then do I have the capacity to take care of myself.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing. What's your relationship with fear like? I'm interested because I want to ask everyone this, but I'm also interested because you have spent time in Antarctica and like go on like these incredible expeditions and like do all this stuff. What's your relationship with fear like?
This is a funny question because I think I have an answer that a lot of people will be like, she's full of it. But I have a great relationship with fear. I very rarely feel real fear around anything. And I think part of that is because I know what real fear is, as opposed to just like psychological, like, oh my God, you know, like, what are they going to think about me? I legit almost never worry about that. I just don't care. And maybe it's because I'm 41. I don't know. But like, it just doesn't bother me. And so the things that a lot of people struggle with that they feel a lot of fear around, it's just, for me, it's water off a duck's back. I mean, to put it into context, you know, the first season that I was down in Antarctica, because I worked in Antarctica for a few years, we almost died at sea in a massive storm on a ship. And I, like, for 12 hours, I was on a vessel that at any given moment, I'm like, oh my God, we're going down. Like, we're going to sink. We're in 15 meter waves in the Drake Passage in a hurricane force storm.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was insane. And so I'm like, this is scary. Like, this is actually scary. This is when you're supposed to feel fear, you know? So everything else, I'm like, well, whatever. Like, nobody's thoughts are going to hurt me. You know, someone thinking something about me, it's none of my business, you know? It's absolutely none of my business. And when I think about things like, you know, what do people think? What are people afraid of? Like, not having enough money or not being able to pay their mortgage. I've been making money off my ideas for a decade. So like, and as long as I have a brain and I can communicate with other human beings, I'll be fine. You know, like, I've proven to myself that anything that I might have feared it's not legit anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And so in the end, I think the only, and I'm not even afraid of being alone, because I lived alone in frickin' Central America for, you know, 2.5 years as a teenager. And like, I know loneliness. I know what isolation is like, thanks to my totally shitty parenting. My parents' parenting, not mine. I have no kids. And so, you know, like, I'm not even afraid of being alone. I'm okay with being alone. I'm an introvert. But yeah, to answer your question, I have a really good relationship with fear. There's very few things that truly concern me or make me afraid. I just don't want to lose my loved ones. That's it, really, right? Because at the end of the day, people are the only thing that matter. And so because I'm so grateful for them and because my only fear is losing them, I'm over the top with affection. Like when my husband leaves for work, he's a Coast Guard, so he'll go out for 5 or 7 days at a time. And like the last time he left, I can't believe I'm admitting this publicly, but he was leaving early in the morning and he woke me up. He's like, "Bye, honey, I'm leaving." And I burst into tears. I was like, "Oh, please be safe. I love you." Just because like I really, him and his presence and his friendship and his love, that's what I fear losing. Like, I adore my humans, you know? So that's the only thing. And I'm really sensitive about it.
I love diving into the answers around this for people, because I think so many of us haven't yet figured out the distinction between fear of the unknown and fear of something actually dangerous.
Yeah.
We live in a world now where cortisol and adrenaline get fired when like someone doesn't reply to a text, and it's like, you need to handle that shit, right? Like you need to do the work to get to a place where it doesn't freak your system out to like, if someone doesn't reply or if someone says something or thinks something, or they might think something. Like I'm not available for that. I don't tolerate it anymore.
Yeah.
The kind of fear, like the things that actually scare me are things that are dangerous.
Yeah. Real danger. Yeah. My husband's a lot more like, he has more of a stress reaction to things than I do. And so every time there's something that's bothering him, I'm like, "Has anyone died or has anyone lost a limb?" He's like, "No." I'm like, "Then there's nothing to worry about." That's my go-to phrase every time, right? If nobody's died and nobody's lost a limb, it'll be fine. We can figure it out. And as you say, if someone doesn't like respond to your email in a certain amount of time or whatever, I mean, a lot of people get really stressed out about that and they start to worry and they're like, "Oh my God, do they hate me?" Or, you know, right now I'm planning a community project for January and I'm inviting all of these people who in my mind are quite big names to be a part of it. And so like, I'm sending out a big ask, like I'm putting myself out there to someone who is sort of like quote unquote internet famous, you know, and like some people don't respond. Some people respond with a no. And I'm just like, "Well, okay, cool. Like, I'm happy that I asked, you know, and I'm not afraid of silence because you know what? People are busy and they have lives and it's not a personal indictment on me. Like, it's okay. I get it, you know?"
And though, like, reaching that point, right? Because I know that some people listening are going to be like, "Well, you're just wired differently and you're not emotionally soft." I'm like, I just heard you be emotionally soft, right?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, God, yeah. Emotionally soft, yeah.
Like, you do care about that. It sounds to me like you've just trained yourself to have a relationship with fear. And I think that from my end, like, the thing that people always say to me, like, "Can you make this go away? Or can we make this go away?" I'm like, "No, I can't remove the things that are going to be scary or threatening or annoying in your life, but we can train to be ninjas and to respond to them rather than react to them and like know they're coming, right?"
Totally.
And the thing with fear is like, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
I've made friends with fear. Fear is now like, go on.
I was just going to say, I think we have to remember, like, a lot of where our fear comes from is that we take things personally, you know, like we're afraid of, especially as entrepreneurs, you're afraid of putting yourself out there. You're afraid of what people will think. You're afraid of people won't respond. You're afraid of like not being good enough and all this kind of stuff. And that's all based on external judgments of what you're doing, thinking, saying, how you're being, right? And what I think is really important for me when I think about the ways that I've trained myself, because, you know, again, like I didn't hatch out of an egg like this, right? We all develop, we all work on ourselves. When I think about the journey that I've taken to get to the point where things don't bother me, is that I always just thought about it really logically. So if I was like, "Oh my God, so-and-so hasn't responded, they hate me." I'm like, "Do I know that they hate me? No. Why would, like, what's this based on?" kind of thing, you know? And then of course, the next time I see that person, maybe like at a conference or wherever, you know, and they're like, "Oh my God, Heather," like they just, maybe, like, I'll just say the example of sending an email, you know, an important email that I had a lot emotionally riding on and they never responded. And they're like, "Oh, sorry, shit, I saw that and I completely forgot." And so, like, I've had enough examples that I'm like, right, yes, it's never a personal indict. I have to not take things personally in the world, in what I put out with my work. I mean, I'm lucky in that I've never put stuff out into the world that people were like, this is shit. Like, I haven't had any internet trolls tear me down or whatever. And even if I did, I'd be like, well, that's your opinion, you know? Like, I can't let other people dictate whether or not I'm going to do the work that I'm here to do, you know? I just got to show up and do it with heart. And if some people don't like it, fine. If some people don't respond, okay. It's cool, man. We are like super complex human beings. And just not taking things personally is a massive step towards not being afraid to do the things that you should be doing.
So why No Plan B as a title?
No Plan B, because when I left my corporate job in June 30th, 2010, best day ever, I decided then and there that I was never going to work for anyone ever again. Like, I was done being an employee. And so No Plan B came out of this idea that, you know, Plan A, which for me is self-determination. Like, from now on, I figure out my livelihood. I decide. I make all the decisions. I decide how much time off I get. I decide everything, you know? Plan A is self-determination. Plan A is working for myself. There is no Plan B. And I mean that in the sense of, like, you know, a lot of people say, or a lot of people's moms say, well, dear, if it doesn't work out, you can always get a job again. Like, that's Plan B. Not in Heather Thorkelson's world. No, thank you. You know, there's no Plan B. And that's not to say, and this is something I talk a lot about with my clients, it's not to say that you would never fall back on a predictable income on your entrepreneurial journey, because sometimes you need, I mean, you can't create from a place of scarcity, right? So if your financial cup is not being filled, you got to get that shit done. You have to actually go and do that. That's fine. That's a detour. It's not falling back on a job. It's a detour on the larger path, which is Plan A, because there is no Plan B. So that's where the title came from.
Cool. That makes sense to me. Because I feel like it's just another example, like a different perspective on it. And I know that you know this perspective as well. I'm like, there's a gazillion plans. And that's because I am someone who is self-determining. Like, I've never had a Plan B. There's never been a Plan B. And so all of the plans are C, D, E, F. Like, they all link back to, I'm just going to be self-determining, because self-determination is how I was made, right? Like, I really struggle with the lack of conviction that I see in other people. Yeah. I really struggle with dabblers. I'm like, oh, this life that you're living looks nice. I'll have a go. No, you don't get to have a go. You get to, like, go all in on don't.
For sure. Yeah. I'm the same. I really struggle with dabblers. It's a really, and also with people who say, like, oh, you started that, like, we have this in my polar company, you know, there's a lot of polar guides who are like, oh, you guys started a polar expedition company, we're going to start a polar expedition company. And of course, you know, I mentioned my husband earlier, he's a bit more of a worrier than I am. And he's like, oh my God, so-and-so, those people, they're starting a polar company, they're going to become our competition. And I'm like, no, they're not. I guarantee you they're not, because they don't understand what it takes to run a business like this. I'm a business person. I work with entrepreneurs all the time. You know, I'm never worried about the dabblers becoming competition, because they don't know what they're getting into. And the in that world, it's a little bit different, but in the world that we're in with an online, like, business coaching and that kind of thing, I do get a little irritated with the dabblers, or the, like, wives who have super wealthy husbands and they're like, I'm going to be a health coach. And I'm just like, yeah.
I don't mind a dollop of skepticism. You know, I think I'm really happy to be proved wrong as well. Right. I'm like, please, you know, I have my doubts, but please, by all means, prove me wrong.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I'm available for people who are like, I'm all in. I haven't got a clue how. I need some help with trust. I've never done this before. Like, you seem to have it handled. Like, help me. Trust me, I don't, not all the time. But I'm really happy to 100% be there for someone who's going to 100% be there for themselves.
I agree completely. And, like, I totally didn't mean to sound so judgmental about people with rich husbands. What I mean more is, like, what you're saying, you know, it's like, are you all in, or are you just like, I feel like I need a new hobby and this looks easy, you know? Because for those of us who know that it's not easy, it can be frustrating, you know? Like, there are no quick fixes. And actually, the whole process of entrepreneurship isn't about your sales funnel or your tactics or anything. It's between your two ears, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you need to be all in. You need to be ready for the personal development journey of what it is to be someone who's shipping your ideas and who's overcoming fear and who's learning how to be a really good decision maker and who's learning how to manage uncertainty and suck up sunk costs and like all these things that nobody tells you about when they're selling you their five figures in 5 weeks or whatever the hell, you know, like it's all that stuff. And so, yeah, if you're all in and you're willing to do the work, I don't care who you are or where you come from, bring it on. Like, let's dig in, you know. But I get a little bit miffed with people who think it's easy, or they look at what you or I have built and they're like, oh, I can do that. I'm like, okay, show me. Then we'll talk, you know?
Yes. That's what I'm saying. Just yes. I'll put it all in the show notes and make sure that people can link through. But where, if people want to come and hang out with you, just to see what you're up to in the world, where's the best place for them to do that? And if they're like, I want to go on a polar expedition, where's the best place for them to go and find out?
Yeah, absolutely. So they can go to my website, heatherthorkelson.com, to find general information about me and the work that I do. I spend a lot of time on Instagram. So Instagram at Heather Thorkelson. I'm also on Facebook, but less active on my business page. Same thing, Heather Thorkelson. And then if anyone wants to go on a polar expedition, you can go to twintracksexpeditions.com, which is named after my big Swedish husband and his twin brother, who are both polar expedition leaders, on top of my husband being a Coast Guard. So he's also someone who likes to work a lot.
Excellent. Well, I personally will be going to have a look. Will you end with, I'm an adult, but with me?
I'm an adult, but I am terrible at being serious. Absolutely terrible. If I'm in a room of serious people, I'm like, get me out of here. I want to tell jokes and eat cake. And like, yeah, I don't fit. I really honestly feel like I don't fit into the adult world very well, because I'm just really bad with adult seriousness. I think it's so boring.
I really struggle with seriousness and seriously. And this is something that's been one of those things that's haunted me my whole life, because I take life very seriously, right? But that doesn't mean that I'm a serious person.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's one of the things, I really struggle with it. Like, I can go into a head hole for hours of like, you know, people say I don't want a serious relationship. I'm like, why would anyone want a serious relationship? But I want someone who takes my relationship seriously. And so I can totally go down a whole wormhole around seriousness.
Yeah, I feel you. And like, I also, because of that personal responsibility thing, and because I'm a stickler for customer service and excellence in work, there are certain things that I'm serious about.
Yep.
Probably more than most. I mean, I think some people would describe me as a little bit intense in that way. But I don't understand why we have to take ourselves so seriously, you know, like, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with fear as well. It's like, you know, when you're so worried about judgment and stuff, it's like, my attitude is like, just who cares? Like, everyone just calm down, you know, like, just be the best that you can be, be true to your word, operate with integrity, and like, let stuff slide. You're a human being. It's hard. It's freaking hard. You know, like, give yourself a break, yeah. Girl.
Yes. Yeah. Let's see if I've got I'm an adult, but I am an adult. But I'm beginning to realize more and more that I'm far more interested in playing than I am in working.
Oh, I love that. I'm with you.
I have nothing else to say. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show and to chat with you. And I'm sure we'll do some more stuff together in the future. I would like that very much. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Ebony. It's been great.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you for listening, for sharing, for rating and reviewing. If you have enjoyed this free content, please take a moment to rate us, to share an episode, to spread the word on social media, or to come find me on Instagram and tell me what you thought. On Instagram, I am at Ebony Allard, and I will see you in the DMs. Bye.